that's what I thought, considering it looked like a mad scientist's dorm room with a lone bed next to a crammed bookshelf. A tall wooden table was covered with technical equipment. The place could have belonged to a chemist. Even stranger, the two sides of the window didn't seem to correlate exactly in terms of physical space. Looking through the speakeasy window was like looking through a dirty telescope, and I couldn't tell exactly where the other end lay. It could have been anywhere in the mortal universe, knowing Abraham. But that didn't matter. It was Ridley. It was a terrible thing to see anyone like that. But for my careless, carefree cousin, it seemed especially cruel. I felt my hair begin to twist in the familiar castor breeze. Ori aspirant, ubi tueor, ibi adeo. Let the wind blow, where I see, I go. I began to twist into nothingness. I felt the world give way beneath me. And when I tried to reach my feet out to touch solid ground, I realized I was now standing next to Ridley, on the outside of the golden cage. "Cuz, what are you doing here?" she called out to me, reaching her long pink fingernails through a space in the bars. "I guess I could say the same to you, Rid. Are you okay?" I approached the bars carefully. I loved my cousin, but I couldn't forget everything that had happened. She chose dark and left us. Link, me, all of us. It was impossible to know whose side she was on. Ever. "Think it's a little obvious, don't you?" she snapped. "I've been better." She rattled the bars. "Much." Ridley sat back down on her heels and began to cry. Like we were both little kids again, and someone had hurt her feelings on the playground. Which didn't happen often, and if it did, it was usually me doing the crying. Rid was always the strong one. Maybe that's why her tears got to me now. I slid down to the floor across from her, taking her hand through the cage bars. "I'm sorry, Rid. I was so angry with you for not coming back when Ethan... Now that Ethan..." She didn't look at me. "I know. I heard. I feel terrible. That's when everything happened. Abraham was furious, and I only made things worse when I made the mistake of trying to leave. I just wanted to go home. But he was so angry that he threw me in here." She shook her head as if she wanted to shake off the memory. "I mean it, Rid. I should have known that you would have come unless something stopped you." "Whatever. More water under another watery bridge." She wiped her eyes, smearing her mascara even more. "Let's blow this place before Abraham comes back, or you'll be stuck in here with me for the next 200 years.
Where did he go?
"I don't know. Usually he spends all day in his creepy lab of creatures, but there's no way to know how long he'll be gone."
"Then we'd better get on with it."
I looked around the room. "Rid, have you seen Abraham with the Book of Moons? Is it here?" She shook her head. "Are you kidding? I wouldn't come within 10 miles of that thing. Not after the way it royally screws anyone who touches it."
"But have you seen it?"
"No way. Not here. If Abraham still has it, he's not dumb enough to keep it on him. He's evil, but he's not stupid."
My heart sank.
Ridley rattled the bars again. "Hurry up! I'm really stuck. Protection casts, from what I can tell. I'm going crazy in here."
Then I heard a terrible crash, and a pile of equipment crates next to me toppled to the ground.
Broken glass and broken wood flew everywhere, like I had upset Abraham's project for the science fair. Some sort of glowing green goop was splattered in my hair.
Oops.
Uncle Macon was trying to untangle himself from John Breed, who had one foot caught in the remnants of a wooden crate.
"Where are we?"
Uncle M stared at the cage in disbelief.
"What kind of twisted place is this?"
"Uncle M?"
Ridley looked as relieved as she was confused.
"Were you traveling?"
"I found him out front," John said. "He wouldn't let me go. When I tried to come back, he just sort of came along for the ride." John must have seen my face because he got defensive. Hey, don't look at me. I wasn't exactly planning on picking up hitchhikers.
Uncle Macon glared at John, who glared right back at him.
Lena Duquesne.
My uncle looked angrier than I'd ever seen him. Green goop was dripping from his otherwise impeccable suit. He glanced from Ridley to me, then pointed at both of us.
You two, come out of there this instant.
I grabbed Ridley's hand and muttered the ori aspirant while Uncle Macon tapped his foot impatiently. A second later, my cousin and I reappeared on the outside of the cage. Uncle Macon, I began. He held up his gloved hand.
Don't. Not a word.
His eyes flashed, and I knew better than to keep talking.
Now, let's focus on what we came here to do, while we still have time to do it. The book.
John had already started pulling open boxes, scanning the shelves for the Book of Moons. Uncle Macon and I joined him, looking until we had searched every possible hiding place. Ridley sat sullenly on a crate, not making things easier, but not making them more difficult either, which I took as a good sign. From what I could see, Abraham Ravenwood appeared to be the caster answer to Dr. Frankenstein. I couldn't recognize much beyond the occasional burner or beaker, and I had taken chemistry. And at the rate John and Uncle Macon were trashing the room, it was going to look like our search was conducted by Frankenstein's monster.
It's not here, John said, finally giving up.
Then neither are we.
Uncle Macon straightened in his overcoat.
Home, John. Now.
Traveling was one thing. The speed at which John managed to get us home, without so much as another word from Uncle Macon, was another. I found myself out of Abraham's hideaway and back in my room before Ridley could wipe off her smeared raccoony mascara. The viola was still playing Paganini's Caprice No. 24 when I got there. Chapter 23. Dairy Keen. The next day, it was raining, and the Dairy Keen was leaking as if it was finally giving up. More depressing, Uncle Macon hadn't even bothered to ground me. Apparently, the situation was hopeless enough without locking me in my room, which was pretty hopeless. Rain fell everywhere at the Dairy Keen, on the inside and out. Water dripped from the square, buzzing light fixtures. It crept down the wall like a slow stain of tears beneath the crookedly mounted Employee of the Month photograph. From the look of it, a member of the Stonewall Jackson cheer squad, of course, though they were all starting to look the same. No one worth crying over. Not anymore. I scanned the nearly empty diner, waiting for Link to show up. Nobody was out on a day like today, not even the flies. I couldn't blame them.
Seriously, could you cut it out? I'm sick of the rain, Lena, and I smell like a wet dog.
Link appeared out of nowhere, sliding into the opposite side of the booth. He looked like a wet dog. That smell has nothing to do with the rain, my friend. I smiled. Unlike John, Link was apparently human enough that the natural elements still affected him. He assumed normal Link posture, leaning back in the corner of the booth and doing his best impression of someone physically capable of falling asleep.
It's not me, I said.
Right, because it's been nothing but sunshine and kitty cats out there since December.
Thunder rumbled in the sky. Link rolled his eyes. I frowned. I guess you must have heard. We found Abraham's place. The book wasn't there. At least we couldn't find it.
Figures. Now what?
He sighed. Plan B. We don't really have a choice. John. I couldn't say it. I curled my hand into a fist on the seat next to me. Thunder rumbled again. Was it me? I didn't know if I was doing it or if the weather outside was doing something to me. I had lost track of myself weeks ago. I stared at the rain dripping into the red plastic bucket in the center of the room. red plastic rain, her tears stain. I tried to shake myself out of it, but I couldn't stop looking at the bucket. The water dripped down from the ceiling rhythmically, like a heartbeat or a poem. A list of names of the dead. First Macon, then Ethan. No, my father, then Macon, my mother, then Ethan, now John. How many people had I lost? How many more would I lose? Would I lose John, too? Would Liv ever forgive me? Did it even matter anymore? I watched the raindrops bead on the greasy table in front of me. Link and I sat together in silence, in front of wadded-up waxy paper, crushed ice, and plastic glasses. A cold, soggy meal nobody was even thinking of eating. If he wasn't trapped at his own dinner table, Link didn't even pretend to move the food around anymore. He nudged me. Hey, come on, Lena. John knows what he's doing. He's a big boy. We're gonna get the book and get Ethan back, no matter how crazy your plan is.
I'm not crazy.
I didn't know who I was saying it to, Link or myself.
I didn't say you were.
You say it every time you have the chance.
You don't think I want him back? Link said. You don't think it sucks to shoot hoops without him watching to tell me how bad I suck or how big my head is getting? I drive around Gatlin in the beater blasting the tunes we used to play, and there's no reason to play them anymore.
I get that it's rough, Link. You know I get it, more than anyone. His eyes welled up, and he dropped his head, staring down at the greasy table between us.
I don't even feel like singing. The guys in the band, they're talking about breaking up. The Holy Rollers could end up as a bowling team.
He looked like he was going to be sick.
At this rate, I'm gonna have nowhere to go but college, or somewhere even worse.
Link, don't say that.
It was true. If Link went to college, even Somerville Community College, it would mean the end of the world had finally arrived, no matter how many times Ethan tried to save us all.
Had tried.
Maybe I'm just not as brave as you are, Lena.
Sure you are. You've survived all those years in your house with your mom, haven't you? I tried to smile, but Link was beyond cheering up. It was like talking to myself.
Maybe I just gotta give up when the odds are as bad as they are now.
What are you talking about? The odds are always this bad, I said.
I'm the guy who gets bit. I'm the guy who gets the F and then even fails summer school.
That wasn't your fault, Link. You were helping Ethan rescue me.
Face it, the only girl I ever loved chose darkness over me.
Rid loved you, you know that. And about Ridley, I had almost forgotten why I'd brought him here. He still didn't know. Seriously, you don't understand, Rid.
I don't want to talk about her. It wasn't meant to be. Nothing's ever gone my way before. I should have known it wouldn't work out.
Link stopped talking because the bell over the door rang in the distance, and time stopped. In a flurry of bright pink flapper feathers and purple tin beads, not to mention eyeliner and lip liner and anything else that could possibly be lined or shined or painted any of the colors of the cosmetic rainbow. Ridley. I barely thought the word before I flew halfway up out of my seat and toward her for a hug. I knew she was coming. I was the one who'd found her at Abraham's. But it was a different thing to see her making her way safe and sound through the plastic tables of the Dairy Queen. I almost knocked her off her 3-inch platforms. Nobody walked in heels like my cousin. Cuz. She kelted it as she buried her face in my shoulder, and all I could smell was hairspray and bath gel and sugar. Glitter swirled in the air around us, knocked loose from whatever sparkly goop she'd smeared all over her body. Dark or light, somehow it never mattered between us. Not when it really counted. We were still family, and we were together again.
It's strange to be here without Short Straw.
I'm sorry, cuz.
I know, Rid.
Here at the Dairy Queen, it was all hitting home. like she finally understood what happened, what I'd lost.
You okay, kid?
She pulled back, looking me in the eyes. I shook my head as my eyes started to blur.
No.
Somebody mind filling me in on what's going on here?
Link looked like he was about to pass out, or throw up, or both.
I was trying to tell you. We found Ridley, stuck in one of Abraham's cages.
You know it, like a peacock, Hot Rod.
She didn't look right at Link, and I wondered if it was because she didn't want to, or because she didn't dare.
A really hot one.
I would never understand what went on between the two of them. I didn't think anyone could, not even them.
Hey, Rid.
Link was pale, even for a quarter incubus. He looked like someone had just punched him in the face. She blew him a kiss across the table.
Looking good, Hot Rod.
He was stammering.
You look, you're looking, I mean, you know.
I know. Ridley winked and turned back to me. Let's get out of here. It's been too long. I can't do this anymore.
Do what?
Link managed not to stammer, though his face was now as red as the plastic bucket beneath the leaking ceiling. Ridley sighed, sticking her lollipop to one side of her mouth.
Hello? I'm a siren, Shrinky Dink, a bad girl. I need to be back among my own.
Abraham, eh? That old goat?
Ridley shook her head. I nodded.
That's the plan.
For what it was worth, if it was worth anything. The air was dark, and the ceiling lights of exile only seemed to make it darker instead of adding to the light. I didn't blame Ridley for wanting to bring us here. It was the first place she always wanted to go when she was dark. But if you weren't dark, it wasn't the most relaxing place in the world. You spent half the night making sure not to accidentally look anyone in the eye or smile in the wrong direction.
And you think getting Shortstraw the Book of Moons is going to help him unkick the can?
Link growled from the next seat. He insisted on coming with us for safekeeping, but I could tell he hated it here even more than I did.
Watch it, Rid. Ethan hasn't kicked the can. He's just bent it out of shape a little.
I smiled. I guess Link could tell me Ethan was gone all he wanted, but it wasn't the same when someone else said it. And it meant Ridley wasn't one of us anymore, at least not for Link. She really had left him, and she really was dark. She was an outsider. Link seemed to sense it too.
I need to use the bathroom.
He hesitated, unwilling to leave my side. Everyone seemed to have their own brand of bodyguard at a club like Exile. My bodyguard happened to be a quarter incubus with a heart of gold. Ridley waited until he was out of earshot.
Your plan sucks.
The plan doesn't suck. Abraham's not going to trade John Breed for the Book of Moons. John isn't worth anything to him now that the order of things has been set right. It's too late.
You don't know that. You're forgetting. I've spent more time than I wanted to with Abraham in the past few months. He's been keeping himself busy. He spends every day in that Frankenstein lab of his, trying to figure out what went wrong with John Breed. He's gone back to the mad science drawing board.
That means he'll want John back, so he'll trade us the book, which is exactly what we want.
Ridley sighed. Are you listening to yourself? He's not a good guy. You don't want to hand John over to him. When Abraham's not gluing wings onto bats, he's been having secret meetings with some creepy bald guy.
Can you be more specific? That doesn't narrow it down.
Ridge shrugged. I don't know. Angel, Angelo, something churchy like that.
I felt sick. My glass turned to ice in my hand. I could feel the frozen particles collecting at the tips of my fingers.
Angelus?
She popped a chip into her mouth from the black bowl on the bar.
That's it. They're teaming up for some super secret takedown. I never heard the details, but this guy definitely hates mortals as much as Abraham does.
What would a member of the Council of the Far Keep be doing with a blood incubus like Abraham Ravenwood? After what Angelus tried to do to Marion, I knew he was a monster. But I thought he was some kind of righteous lunatic, not someone who would conspire with Abraham. Still, it wasn't the first time Abraham and the Far Keep seemed to have their agendas aligned. Uncle Macon had brought it up before, right after Marion's trial. I shook my head at the thought. We have to tell Marion, after we get that book. So unless you have a better idea, we're meeting Abraham to make the trade. I drained what was left of my frozen soda water, knocking the glass back down to the bar. It shattered in my hand. The room quieted around me, and I could feel the eyes. Non-human eyes, some gold and others black as the tunnels themselves, staring back at me. I ducked my head from view. The bartender made a face, and I glanced at the door from the corner of my eye, half expecting to see my Uncle Macon standing there. The bartender was staring.
Those are some eyes you've got.
Ridge shot me a look. Hers? One of them didn't take, she said casually. You know how it goes. We waited in our seats, nervous and tense. You didn't want to attract too much attention at exile. Not when you only had one gold eye to show for it. The bartender studied me for another moment, then nodded and checked his watch.
Yeah, I know how it goes.
This time he glanced at the door. He'd probably already made the call to my uncle. That rat. You're going to need all the help you can get, cuz. What are you saying, Rid? I'm saying it looks like I'm going to have to rescue you fools again. She flicked a piece of broken glass off the counter. Rescue us how? You leave that to me. Turns out I'm not just another pretty face. Well, I'm that too. She smiled, but she couldn't quite pull it off. All this and another pretty face. Even her smart mouth seemed half-hearted to me now. I wondered if Ethan's disappearance was getting to her as much as the rest of us. My instincts were still right about one thing. Uncle Macon showed up at the door like clockwork, and I was back home in my bedroom before I could ask her. Chapter 24. The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Ridley was waiting for us behind the farthest row of crypts, which, judging by the number of abandoned beer bottles in the bushes, was also a Gatlin County hotspot. I couldn't imagine hanging out here willingly. His garden of perpetual peace still had Abraham's fingerprints all over it. Nothing seemed to have changed since he had called up the Vexes only weeks before the 18th moon. Warning signs and yellow caution tape created a labyrinth between the broken mausoleums, uprooted trees, and cracked gravestones in the new section of the cemetery. Now that the order of things was repaired, the grass wasn't burning up anymore, and the lubbers were gone. But the other scars were still there if you knew where to look for them. True to Gatlin form, the worst of the damage had already been hidden under the layers of fresh dirt Ridley was standing on now. The caskets had been reburied, and the tombs sealed. I wasn't surprised. It wasn't like the good citizens of Gatlin to keep the skeletons out of the closet for long. Rid unwrapped a cherry lollipop and waved it around dramatically. I sold it to him, hook, line, and stinker. She smiled at Link. That's you, Shrinky Dink.
You know what they say, takes one to know one.
Link shot back. You know I smell like frosting on a cupcake. Why don't you come over here, and I'll show you just how sweet I can be. She wriggled her long pink nails like claws. Link walked over to John, who was leaning against a weeping angel that was split right down the middle.
Just calling it like I see it, babe, and I can smell you just fine from here.
Link was throwing Ridley more than just quarter incubus swagger today. Now that he'd wrapped his head around the fact that she was back, it was like he lived to trade insults with her. Ridley turned back to me, annoyed that she hadn't gotten a bigger rise out of him. All it took was a little trip back to Nolan's, and I had Abraham eating out of my hand. That was hard to imagine,
and John definitely wasn't buying it.
You expect us to believe you charmed Abraham with a few Ridley Pops? You in what chain of candy stores?
Ridley pouted. Of course not. I had to sell it. So I thought, who would be stupid enough to do whatever I say and play right into my hands?
She blew Link a kiss.
Our little Dinkubus, of course.
Link's jaw tightened. She's full of crap.
All I had to do was tell Abraham that I used Link and his feelings for me to infiltrate your stupid little circle and figure out your even stupider little plan. Then I complained about him keeping me caged like his prized pet. Of course, I said I couldn't blame him. Who wouldn't want me around full time?
Is that a question? Because I'd be happy to answer. Link snapped. He wasn't mad that you broke out of your fancy birdcage?
John asked.
Ridley's voice edged up a little.
Abraham knew I wouldn't stay in there if I could find a way out. I'm a siren. It's not my nature to be confined. I told him I used my power of persuasion on his pathetic incubus errand boy and convinced him to let me out. It didn't end well. Abraham just got a bigger cage for him.
What else did you say?
I wanted to know if there was really a chance we were getting the book. I twisted my charm necklace around my finger, trying not to think about the memories slipping around it.
I broke it down for him and said I'd rather bet on him than you guys.
She gave Link a sweet smile. You know how I like a winning team. Naturally, Abraham believed every word. Why wouldn't he? It's so utterly believable.
Link looked like he wanted to throw her across the graveyard. And Abraham will be there. Today?
John still didn't trust her.
He'll be there. In the flesh.
Of course, I'm using the term loosely.
She shuddered. Very loosely. He agreed to trade me for the Book of Moons, John asked.
Ridley sighed, leaning against the crypt wall.
Well, technically, I believe it went something like,
they're stupid enough to believe you'll trade John for the book, but of course you won't.
And then there might have been some laughing and some drunken casting. It's all a haze.
Link folded his arms across his chest. The thing is, Rid, how do we know you're not saying the same thing to him? You're dark as they come. How can we know?
He stepped protectively in front of me.
Whose side you're really on?
She's my cousin, Link. Even as I said it, I wasn't really sure of the answer. Ridley was a dark caster again. The last time she offered to help me, it was a trap, and she led me right to my mother and my 17th moon. But I knew she loved me, as much as a dark caster could love anyone, as much as Rid could love anyone other than herself.
Ridley leaned closer to Link.
Good question, Shrinky Dink.
Too bad I have no intention of answering it.
One of these days, I guess I'll figure that one out for myself.
Link frowned, and I smiled.
Let me give you a little clue,
Rid purred.
Today's not the day.
Then, in a swirl of cotton candy body glitter, the siren he loved to hate was gone. It was just starting to get dark when we left Liv and Uncle Macon in the study, poring over every caster book they could find about Shears and Ravenwood history, respectively. Liv was convinced that Ethan was trying to contact us, and she was determined to find a way to communicate with him. Every time I went down there, she was taking notes or adjusting the crazy gadget she used to measure supernatural frequencies. I think she was desperate to find a solution that didn't involve trading John for the Book of Moons. I didn't blame her. Uncle Macon was, too, even if he wouldn't admit it. He was scouring every journal and scrap of paper he could find for references to other places where Abraham could have hidden the book. That's why I couldn't tell them what we were doing. We already knew how Liv felt about the idea of trading John for the book, and Uncle Macon wasn't going to trust Ridley. Instead, I told them I wanted to visit Ethan's grave, and John volunteered to go with me. Link was waiting for John and me back at the cemetery. The sky was dark now,
and I could barely make out where a crow circled high in the air above us, shrieking as we made our way toward the oldest part of his garden of perpetual peace. I shivered. That crow had to be some sort of omen. But there was no way of knowing which kind. Either things were going to go well, and I would end the day with the Book of Moons and a chance at getting Ethan back, or I'd fail and lose John in the process. John Breed wasn't the love of my life, but he was the love of someone's life. And John and I had spent more than a few dark months together when he and Rid seemed like the only people I could talk to. But John wasn't the same guy he was back then. He had changed, and he didn't deserve to go back to a life with Abraham. I wouldn't have wished that on anyone. What did I become? Bargaining with a life that isn't mine isn't a bargain. Misery doesn't come cheap. John wouldn't look at me. Even Link kept his eyes fixed on the path ahead of us. I felt like they were disappointed in me for being so selfish. I was disappointed in myself. It is what it is, and I am what I am. I'm no better than Ridley. I only want what I want. Either way, it didn't stop my feet from walking. I tried not to think about it as I followed Link and John through the trees, while most of his garden of perpetual peace was in the process of being restored to its pre-vex attack state. The same wasn't true of the older part of the graveyard. I hadn't seen it since the night the earth cracked open, covering these hills with decomposing corpses and severed bones. Though the bodies were gone, the ground was still overturned, huge sinkholes replacing the graves that had surrounded generations of waits since before the Civil War, even if Ethan wasn't here. Thank God. This blows. Link trudged up the hill with his garden shears in hand. But don't worry, I got your back. He's not going to take you off to creepy old guy land, not without a fight, not with these babies. John shoved Link to the side. Put those things away, rookie. You won't be able to get close enough to Hunting to clip the grass around his feet. And if Abraham sees them, he'll use them to slit your throat without even touching them. Link shoved John back, and I ducked to avoid being knocked down the hill as collateral damage. Yeah, well, they helped me out on the way to that guy Obadiah's place when I took out that chicken-fried back guy. Just don't get me killed, Caster boy. Hold up a second. John, now serious, stopped walking and turned to both of us. Abraham is no joke. You have no idea what he's capable of. I'm not sure anyone does. Stay out of the way and let me handle him. Your backup in case Hunting or your girlfriend gives us trouble. Rid's on our side, remember? I reminded him. At least she's supposed to be, and she's not my girlfriend. Link clenched his jaw. In my experience, the only side Ridley's ever on is her own. John stepped over a broken statue of a praying angel, her hands cracked at the wrists. All the broken angels around here were starting to feel like a bad omen. Link looked annoyed, but he didn't say anything. He didn't seem to like it when anyone but him criticized Ridley. I wondered if things could ever really be over between them. He and John navigated around the broken caskets and tree limbs, reaching an enormous sinkhole just beyond the old honeycut crypt. I did my best to keep up, but they were incubuses, so there was nothing I could do, short of casting an incubus cloning spell. But soon it didn't matter, because we had nowhere left to go. Abraham was waiting for us. Either we had walked right into his trap, or he had walked right into ours. It was almost time to find out. Abraham Ravenwood was standing on the far side of the sinkhole, wearing a long black coat and stovepipe hat, and leaning against a splintered tree. He looked bored, as if this was an annoying errand. The Book of Moons was tucked under his arm. I breathed a sigh of relief. He brought it, I said quietly. We don't have it yet, Link said under his breath. Wearing a black turtleneck and a leather jacket, Hunting stood behind his great-great-great-grandfather. He was blowing smoke rings at Ridley. She coughed, waving the smoke away from her red dress, and gave her uncle a dirty look. There was something disturbing about seeing her dressed in red, standing a few feet away from two blood incubuses. I hoped John was wrong, and Ridley really was on our side. For Link's sake, as much as my own. We both loved her, and you couldn't control who you loved, even if you wanted to. That had been Genevieve's problem with Ethan Carter Waite. It had been Uncle Macon's problem with Lila, Link's with Ridley, probably even Ridley's with Link. Love was how all these knots started to unravel in the first place. You brought it, I called across to Abraham. And you've brought him. Abraham's eyes narrowed at the sight of John. There's my boy. I've been so worried. John tensed.
I'm not your boy, and you've never cared about me, so you can stop pretending.
That's not true.
Abraham acted hurt.
I've put a great deal of energy into you.
Too much, if you ask me,
Hunting said.
No one did, Abraham snapped.
Hunting clenched his jaw and flicked his cigarette into the grass. He didn't look pleased, which meant he would probably take that anger out on someone who didn't deserve it and didn't expect it. We were all plausible candidates. John looked disgusted.
You mean treating me like a slave and using me to do your dirty work? Thanks, but I'm not interested in the kind of energy you put into things.
Abraham stepped forward, his black string tie blowing in the breeze.
I don't care what interests you. You serve a purpose, and when you stop serving it, you won't be useful to me anymore. I think we both know how I feel about things that aren't of any use to me.
He smirked.
I watched Seraphine burn to death, and the only thing that bothered me was the ash on my jacket.
He was telling the truth. I had watched my mother burn, too. Not that I thought of Seraphine that way, but hearing Abraham talk about her like that made me feel something, even if I didn't know what. Sympathy? Compassion? Do I feel sorry for the woman who tried to kill me? Is that possible? John had told me that Abraham hated casters as much as mortals. I hadn't believed him until that moment. Abraham Ravenwood was cold, calculating, and evil. He really was the devil, or the closest thing I'd ever met. I watched as John raised his head high and called to Abraham.
Just give my friends the book, and I'll leave with you. That was the deal.
Abraham laughed, the book still safely tucked under his arm.
The terms have changed. I think I'll keep it after all.
He nodded at Link.
And your new friend.
Ridley stopped sucking on her lollipop.
You don't want him. He's worthless. Trust me.
She was lying. Abraham knew it too. A vicious smile spread across his face.
As you wish. Then we can feed him to Hunting's dogs. When we get home.
There was a time when Link would have backed up, scared out of his mind. But that was before John bit him and his life changed, before Ethan died, and everything changed. I watched Link standing next to John now. He wasn't going anywhere, even if he was afraid. That Link was long gone. John tried to step in front of him, but Link held out his arm.
I can defend myself. Don't be stupid, John snapped. You're only a quarter incubus. That makes you half as strong as me, without the caster blood.
Boys, Abraham snapped his fingers. This is all very moving, but it's time to get going. I have things to do and people to kill.
John squared his shoulders.
I'm not going anywhere with you unless you give them the book. I've come into contact with some powerful casters lately. I make my own choices now.
John collected powers the way Abraham collected victims. Ridley's power of persuasion, even some of my abilities as a natural, not to mention the ones he absorbed from all the other casters who unknowingly touched him. Abraham had to be wondering whose power John had tapped into. Still, I started to panic. Why hadn't we taken John back down into the tunnels to collect a few more? Who was I to think we could take on Abraham? Hunting glanced at Abraham, and a flash of recognition passed between them. A secret they shared.
Is that so?
Abraham dropped the Book of Moons at his feet.
And why don't you come over here and take it?
John had to know it was some kind of trick, but he started walking anyway. I wished Liv were here to see how brave he was. Then again, I was glad she wasn't, because I could barely stand to watch him take another step closer to the ancient incubus, and I wasn't the girl who loved him. Abraham held out his hand and flicked his wrist, like he was turning a doorknob. With that one motion, everything changed. Instantly, John grabbed his head like someone had just cracked it open from the inside and dropped to his knees. Abraham kept his arm in front of him, closing his fist, slowly, and John jerked violently, screaming in pain.
What the hell?
Link grabbed John's arm and yanked him to his feet. John could barely stand. He swayed, trying to regain his balance. Hunting laughed. Ridley was still standing next to him, and I could see the lollipop shaking in her hand. I tried to think of a cast, anything that would stop Abraham, even for a second. Abraham stepped closer, gathering up the bottom of his coat to keep it from dragging in the mud.
Did you think I would create something as powerful as you if I couldn't control it?
John froze, his green eyes fearful. He squinted hard, trying to fight the pain.
What are you talking about?
I think we both know, Abraham said. I made you, boy. Found the right combination, the parentage I needed, and created a new breed of incubus.
John staggered back, stunned.
That's a lie. You found me when I was a kid.
Abraham smiled.
That depends on your interpretation of the word found.
What are you saying?
John's face was ashen.
We took you. I did engineer you, after all.
Abraham dug around in his jacket pocket and removed a cigar.
Your parents had a few happy years together. It's more than most of us get.
What happened to my parents?
John gritted his teeth. I could almost see the rage. Abraham turned to Hunting, who lit the cigar with a silver lighter.
Answer the boy, Hunting.
Hunting flipped the top of the lighter closed. He shrugged.
It was a long time ago, kid.
They were juicy and chewy. But I can't remember the details.
John lurched forward and ripped through the darkness. One second he was there, the next he was gone, sliding away in a ripple of air. He reappeared just inches in front of Abraham and wrapped his hand around the old incubus's throat.
I'm going to kill you, you sick son of a bitch.
The tendons in John's arm tightened, but his grip didn't. The muscles in his hand were tensing, his fingers obviously trying to close. But they wouldn't. John grabbed his wrist with his other hand, trying to brace it. Abraham laughed.
You can't hurt me. I'm the architect of the design. Think I would build a weapon like you without a kill switch?
Ridley stepped back, watching as John's hand loosened against his will, his fingers opening as he tried to force them closed again with his other hand. It was impossible. I couldn't bear to watch.
Abraham seemed more in control of John now than he had on the night of the 17th moon. Worse, John's awareness didn't seem to change the fact that he couldn't control his body. Abraham was pulling the strings.
"You're a monster,"
John hissed, still holding his wrist inches from Abraham's throat.
"Flattery won't get you anywhere. You've caused me lots of problems, boy. You owe me."
Abraham smiled.
"And I plan to take it out of your flesh."
He twitched his hands again, and John rose off the ground further, clutching his own neck with his hands, strangling himself. Abraham was trying to do more than make a point.
"You have outlived your usefulness. All that work for nothing."
John's eyes rolled back in his head, and his body went limp.
"Don't you need him?"
Ridley shouted. "You said he was the ultimate weapon."
"Unfortunately, he's defective," Abraham answered.
I noticed something in my peripheral vision a moment before I heard his voice.
"One could say the same thing about you, grandfather."
Uncle Macon stepped out from behind one of the crypts, his green eyes glowing in the darkness.
"Put the boy down."
Abraham laughed, though his expression was anything but amused.
"Defective. That's a compliment coming from the little incubus who wanted to be a caster."
Abraham's grip on John loosened, just enough for John to get some air. The blood incubus was focusing his anger on Uncle Macon now.
"I never wanted to be a caster, but I'm glad to accept any fate that unburdens me from the darkness you brought upon this family."
Uncle Macon pointed a hand at John, and a wave of energy flashed across the graveyard, the blast hitting John squarely. John yanked his hands away from his neck as his body dropped to the ground. Hunting started toward his brother, but Abraham stopped him, clapping dramatically.
"Nicely done. That's quite a party trick, son. Maybe next time you can light my cigar."
Abraham's features settled in his familiar sneer.
"Enough games. Let's finish this."
Hunting didn't hesitate. He ripped through the darkness as Uncle Macon focused his green eyes on the black sky. Hunting materialized in front of his brother just as the sky exploded into a blanket of pure light. Sunlight. Uncle Macon had done it once before, in the parking lot of Jackson High. But this time, the light was even more intense and focused. That light coming from him had been castor green. This time, it was something stronger and more natural, as if the light came from the sky itself. Hunting's body jerked. He reached out and grabbed his brother's shirt, taking them both to the ground. But the killing light only intensified. Abraham's skin went pale, the color of white ash. The light seemed to weaken him, but not nearly as quickly as it was draining Hunting. Even as Hunting desperately tried to stay alive, Abraham only seemed interested in trying to kill us. The old blood incubus was too strong, and he reached out for Uncle Macon. I knew better than to underestimate him. Even wounded, he wouldn't give up until he destroyed us all. An overwhelming sense of panic surged inside me. I concentrated every thought, every cell on Abraham. The earth around him bucked, tearing itself from the ground like a rug being pulled out from under him. Abraham staggered and then turned his attention to me. He closed his hand around the air in front of him, and an invisible force tightened around my throat. I felt my feet rise off the ground, my chucks kicking below me.
"Lena!"
John shouted. He closed his eyes, concentrating on Abraham, but whatever he was planning, he wasn't fast enough. I couldn't breathe.
"I don't think so."
Abraham twisted his free hand, bringing John to his knees in seconds. Link charged Abraham, but another simple flick of the blood incubus's wrist sent him flying, Link's back hit the jagged stone crypt with a loud crack. I struggled to stay conscious. Hunting was below me, his hands around Uncle Macon's neck. But he didn't seem to have enough strength left to hurt his brother. The color slowly drained from Hunting's skin, turning his body hauntingly transparent. I gasped for breath, transfixed, as Hunting's hands slid from Uncle Em's neck, and he started writhing in pain.
"Macon, stop," he pleaded.
Uncle Macon focused his energy on his brother. The light held steady as the darkness leached out of Hunting's body and into the overturned earth. Hunting seized and sucked in his last breath. Then his body shuddered and froze.
"I'm sorry, brother. You left me no choice."
Macon stared down at what was left before Hunting's corpse disintegrated, as if he had never existed at all.
"One down," he said grimly.
Abraham shielded his eyes, trying to determine if Hunting was really gone. The color was beginning to seep out of Abraham's skin now, but it had only made it as far as his wrists. He would kill me long before the sunlight took him out. I had to do something before we all ended up dead. I closed my eyes, trying to push past the pain. My mind was slipping into numbness. Thunder rumbled overhead.
"A storm. Is that all you've got, my dear?"
Abraham said.
"Such a waste. Just like your mother."
Anger and guilt churned inside me. Seraphine was a monster, but she was a monster Abraham had helped create. Abraham had used her weaknesses to lure her into darkness, and I had watched her die. Maybe we were both monsters. Maybe we all are.
"I'm nothing like my mother."
Seraphine's fate was decided for her, and she wasn't strong enough to fight it. I was. Lightning tore across the sky and struck a tree behind Abraham. Flames raced down the trunk. Abraham took off his hat and shook it with one hand, careful to keep the hand tethered to my throat, tightly clenched.
"I always say, it's not a party until something catches fire."
My uncle rose to his feet, his black hair messy and his green eyes glowing even brighter than before.
"I would have to agree."
The light in the sky intensified, blazing like a spotlight on Abraham. As we watched, the beam exploded in a blinding flash of white, forming two horizontal beams of pure energy. Abraham swayed, shielding his eyes, his iron grip retracted, and my body fell to the rotting soil. Time seemed to stop. We all stared at the white beam spreading across the sky. Except one of us. Link ripped before anyone else had a chance to react, dematerializing in a split second like he was a pro. I couldn't believe it. The only times he'd ever ripped in front of me, he practically flattened me like a pancake. Not this time. A crack in space opened up for him, only inches in front of Abraham Ravenwood. Link yanked the garden shears out of the waistband of his jeans, raising them above his head. He plunged them into Abraham's heart before the old incubus even realized what had happened. Abraham's black eyes widened, and he stared at Link, struggling to stay alive as a circle of red seeped slowly out around the blades. Link leaned in close.
"All that engineering wasn't for nothing, Mr. Ravenwood. I'm the best of both worlds. A hybrid incubus with his own onboard navigation."
Abraham coughed desperately, his eyes fixed on the mostly mortal boy who had taken him down. Finally, his body slid to the ground, the stolen science lab shears protruding from his chest. Link stood over the body of the blood incubus who had hunted us for so long, the one person generations of casters hadn't been able to touch. Link grinned at John and nodded.
"Screw all that incubus crap. That's how you do it mortal style."
Chapter 25. Death's Door. Link stood over Abraham's body, watching as it started to disintegrate into tiny particles of nothing. Ridley stepped up beside him, looping her arm through his. Grab the scissors, Hot Rod. They might come in handy if I need to cut myself out of a cage sometime. Link pulled the shears from what was left of the blood incubus.
I would like to take this opportunity to thank the Jackson High Biology Department. Stay in school, kids.
He shoved the shears back into his jeans. John walked over and slapped Link on the shoulder.
Thanks for saving my ass, mortal style.
You know it. I got some mad skills, Link grinned.
Uncle Macon brushed off his trousers.
I don't think anyone can argue with that assessment, Mr. Lincoln. Well played. Your timing was impeccable.
How did you know we were here? I asked. Had Alma seen something and given us away?
Mr. Breed was kind enough to leave a note.
I turned to John, who was kicking at the dirt with his boot.
You told him what we were doing? What about our plans? What about the part where we agreed not to tell my uncle anything?
I didn't. The note was for Liv, he answered sheepishly.
I couldn't just disappear without saying goodbye.
Link shook his head.
Seriously, dude? Another note? Why didn't you just leave a map?
This was the second time John's guilty conscience and one of his notes had led Liv, or in this case, my uncle, to him.
You should all be grateful for Mr. Breed's sentimental inclinations, Uncle M said. Or I'm afraid this evening could have resulted in a very unfortunate outcome.
Link elbowed John.
You're still a sap.
I stopped listening. Why couldn't Liv keep her mouth shut? Another voice entered my mind.
I hardly think blaming Liv for your mistakes is necessary.
I was almost too stunned to speak. My uncle had never kelted with me before. It was a power he could only have acquired after his transition into a caster. How?
You know my abilities are constantly evolving. This one is unpredictable, I'm afraid.
He shrugged innocently. I tried not to think. It didn't seem to stop him from scolding me.
Really? You thought you could take on Abraham alone in a graveyard?
But how did you know where we were? John asked. I didn't put that in the note.
Oh my God. Uncle M, can you read minds?
Hardly.
My uncle snapped his fingers, and Boo lumbered up the hill. Knowing my uncle, it was practically a confession. I felt my hair lift from my shoulders as a gentle wind whipped around me. I tried to calm down.
You were spying on me? I thought we made a deal about that.
That was before you and your friends decided you were equipped to take on Abraham Ravenwood on your own.
His voice rose.
Have you learned nothing?
The Book of Moons lay in the dirt, the moon embossed on its black leather cover facing the sky. Link bent down to pick it up.
I wouldn't do that, Hot Rod, Ridley said. You don't have that much incubus in you.
She picked up the book and touched her lollipop to his lips, almost like a kiss.
Wouldn't want those pretty hands to get burned.
Thanks, babe.
Don't call me...
Link grabbed the lollipop out of her hand.
Yeah, I know.
I watched the way they looked at each other. Any idiot could see they were in love, even if they were the only two idiots who couldn't. My chest ached, and I thought about Ethan. The missing piece. My breath. My heart. My memory. Me. The other half. The missing half.
Stop.
I didn't want to write poems in my mind, especially if my uncle could hear them. I needed to send a completely different kind of message.
Rid, give it to me.
She nodded and handed me the Book of Moons, the book that nearly killed Ethan and then Uncle Macon, the book that took more than it ever gave. Part of me wanted to set it on fire and see if it would burn, though I doubted something as mundane as fire could destroy it. It still would have been worth a try if it prevented even one person from using the book to hurt someone else, or themselves. But Ethan needed it, and I trusted him. Whatever he was doing, I believed he wouldn't use it to hurt anyone. And I wasn't sure he could hurt himself now. We have to take it to Lila's grave. Uncle Macon studied me for a long moment, an unfamiliar mixture of sadness and worry warring in his eyes. All right. I recognized his tone. He was indulging me. I started walking toward Lila Waite's grave, next to the empty plot where the good folks of Gatlin believed my uncle was buried. Ridley sighed dramatically. Great, more time in the creepy graveyard. Link slung his arm over her shoulders casually. Don't worry, babe, I'll protect you. Ridley looked at him suspiciously. Protect me? You do realize I'm a Darkcaster again. I like to think you're kinda on the gray side. Either way, I'll give you a pass today. I did just kill the Galactus of Incubuses. Rid flipped her blonde and pink hair. Whatever that means. I stopped listening and wove my way through the cemetery, the Book of Moons pressed against my chest. I felt the heat radiating from it, as if the worn leather cover might burn me, too. I knelt in front of Ethan's mother's grave. This was the spot where I'd left the black stone from my necklace for him. It seemed to work then. I could only hope it would work again. The Book of Moons had to be a whole lot more important than a rock. My uncle stared at the headstone, transfixed. I wondered how long he would love her. Forever, that was my best guess. For whatever reason, this place was a doorway I couldn't find my way through. The important thing was that Ethan could open it somehow. He had to. I put the book on the grave, touching it for what I hoped would be the last time. I don't know why you need it, Ethan, but here it is. Please come home. I waited, as if it might disappear right in front of me. Nothing happened. Maybe we should leave it alone, Link suggested. Ethan probably needs privacy or something to do his ghost tricks. He's not a ghost, I snapped. Link held up his hands. Sorry, his sheer tricks. He didn't realize that the word didn't matter. It was the image the word called up in my mind. A pale, lifeless Ethan. Dead. The way I found him the night of my 16th moon, after Seraphine stabbed him. Panic pressed against my lungs like two hands squeezing the breath out of me. I couldn't stand to think about it.
Let's leave it and see what happens, John said.
Absolutely not.
Uncle Macon was done indulging me.
I'm sorry, Lena.
What if it was Lila? His face clouded over at the mention of her name. The question hung in the air, but we both knew the answer. If the woman he loved needed him, he would do anything to help, from this side of the grave or any other. I knew that too. He studied me for a long moment, then he sighed, nodding.
All right. You can try. But if it doesn't work...
Yeah, we can't just ditch the most powerful book in the caster and mortal worlds in some grave and walk away.
Ridley was still perched on the headstone, smacking her gum.
What if someone finds it?
I'm afraid Ridley's right,
Uncle Macon sighed.
I'll wait here.
I don't think it'll work if you're here, sir. You're a scary kind of person, too.
Link said as respectfully as possible.
Sir, we are not leaving the Book of Moons unattended, Mr. Lincoln.
An idea took hold slowly, stretching out until it was perfectly formed. Maybe we don't need someone to stay with the book, but something.
Huh?
Link scratched his head. I bent down. Boo, come here, boy. Boo Radley stood up and shook his black fur, which was as thick as a wolf's. I dug my fingers behind his ears. That's my good boy. Not a bad idea. Rid put two fingers in her mouth and whistled.
You really think one dog can fight off the blood pack if they show up? Link asked.
Uncle Macon crossed his arms.
Boo Radley is hardly a common dog.
Even a caster dog can use a little help, Rid said. A branch cracked and something leaped from the bushes.
Holy crap!
Link yanked the garden shears out of his waistband just as Bade's paws hit the ground. Leah Ravenwood's enormous mountain cat growled. Uncle Em smiled.
My sister's cat. An excellent idea. She does provide a certain level of intimidation that Boo lacks.
Boo barked, offended. Here, kitty, kitty. Ridley reached out her hand, and Bade stalked over. Link stared at her.
You're a total psycho.
Bade growled at Link again, and Rid laughed. You're just mad because Bade doesn't like you, hot stuff. John took a step back.
Yeah, well, I'm not petting her either.
So we leave the book for a little while and see what happens. I hugged Boo. You stay here. The caster dog sat down in front of the grave like a guard dog, and Bade came over and stretched out in front of him lazily. I stood up, but I was having trouble forcing myself to walk away. What if something happened to it? The book might be Ethan's only chance to get back to me. Could I risk it? John noticed I wasn't moving and pointed to the rise a few yards beyond the grave.
We can hang out on the other side in case they need some backup, okay?
Ridley hopped off the headstone, her platform smacking against the border of the plot. In the south, that had to be the equivalent of something like 7 years of bad luck. Maybe more in Gatlin. She draped her arm over my shoulders and waved a lollipop in front of me. Come on, I'll tell you all about my adventures in shackles. Link jogged up next to us.
Did you say shackles? Those are like handcuffs, right?
He seemed a little too excited about hearing the details.
Mr. Lincoln.
Uncle M looked like he wanted to strangle him. Link stopped in his tracks.
Sorry, sir, it was, just a joke, you know.
I let Ridley drag me down the other side of the hill, while Link tried to talk his way out of trouble with Uncle Macon. John trudged behind us, his boots as heavy as any mortal's footsteps. If I closed my eyes, I could pretend they were Ethan's. But it was getting harder and harder to pretend. I was kelting to him before I even realized it, the same three words over and over. Please come home. I wondered if he could hear me, if he was already on his way. I counted the minutes, wondering how long we should wait before checking on the book. Even Link and Ridley's banter couldn't distract me, which was saying a lot. I think all this quarter incubus stuff is going to your head, Ridley said. Link flexed.
Oh, maybe it's taking out the baddest badass around.
Ridley rolled her eyes. Please.
Do you two ever stop?
John asked. They both whipped around to look at him.
Stop what?
They asked at the same time. I was about to tell John not to bother when I saw a streak of black in the sky. The crow, the same one that had watched us when we went to meet Abraham. Maybe it was following us. Maybe it knew something. It dipped and circled the area above Ethan's grave. It's the crow. I took off back up the hill. John ripped and appeared at my side.
What are you talking about?
Link and the others caught up to us.
Where's the fire?
I pointed at the bird. I think that crow has been following us. Uncle Macon studied the bird.
Interesting.
Ridley smacked her gum.
What?
A seer like Amari would tell you that many believe crows can cross between the world of the living and the world of the dead.
We made it over the rise. Bade and Boo were staring up at the sleek black bird.
So what? Even if it could fly from world to world, you really think that little bird could carry the Book of Moons?
Link asked. I didn't know. But the crow was connected to Ethan somehow. I was sure of it.
Why is it circling like that?
John asked. Ridley strolled up behind us. It's probably scared of the giant cat. For once, she might be right.
Bade and Boo, go home,
I called. The big cat's ears perked up at the sound of her name. Boo hesitated and looked up at Uncle Macon. He nodded to the dog.
Go on.
Boo cocked his head. Then he turned and lumbered through the tall grass. Bade yawned, baring her huge white teeth, and followed, her tail swishing like a lion's from one of the nature shows Link was always watching on the Discovery Channel. He blamed it on his mom, but in the last couple of months, I'd noticed him watching it by himself more than a few times.
The crow circled again and swooped toward us, landing on the headstone.
Its beady black eyes seemed to be staring right at me.
How come it's checking you out like that?
Link asked. I stared back at the black bird.
Please, take the book or make it disappear. Whatever you have to do to get it to Ethan.
Uncle Macon looked at me from the other side of the headstone.
He can't hear you, Lena. You can't kelt with a bird, I'm afraid.
I glared at my uncle. At this point, I would try anything.
How do you know?
The crow hopped down, its talons touching the thick leather cover for a split second before it squawked and pulled its legs up again quickly.
I think the book burned it, John said.
Poor guy.
I knew he was right. I felt the tears welling in my eyes. If the crow couldn't touch the book, how would we get it to Ethan? I'd left the black stone Ethan had asked for, the one from my charm necklace, right here on the grave. I didn't know what had happened to it after that.
Maybe the bird has nothing to do with it, and he's just a messenger or something,
John offered. I sniffled, swiping at my face.
Then what's the message?
John squeezed my shoulder.
Don't worry.
How are we going to get the book to Ethan? He needs it or he can't.
I couldn't finish. I couldn't stand to even think it. We had risked our lives to track down Abraham Ravenwood, and we had found a way to kill him, at least Link had. The Book of Moons was right here at my feet, and there was no way to get it to Ethan.
We'll figure it out, cuz.
Ridley picked up the book, the back cover dragging across the stone.
Someone must have the answer.
John smiled at me.
Someone does. Especially when it comes to that book. Come on, let's go ask her.
A flutter of hope filled my chest.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
He nodded.
It is President's Day, which is still a bank holiday the last time I checked.
Ridley pulled on the bottom of her miniskirt, which didn't move an inch.
Who's thinking what and where are we going?
I grabbed her arm, tugging her down the hill.
Your favorite place, Rid.
The library.
It's not that bad,
she said, inspecting her purple nail polish.
Except for all those books.
I didn't respond. There was only one book that mattered right now, and my whole world, and Ethan's future, depended on it.
Chapter 26. Quantum Physics.
From just inside the hidden grating that led into the Lunae Libri, I could see all the way down to the bottom of the stairs. Marion sat behind the circular reception desk, exactly where I knew she would be. Liv was pacing at the far end of the room, where the stacks began. As we came down into the Lunae Libri, Liv's neck snapped up. She bolted across the room the moment she saw John. But he was faster. John ripped, materializing in Liv's path and gathering her up in his arms.
My heart broke a little as I watched the relief spread across her face. I tried not to feel envious.
You're all right.
Liv threw her arms around John's neck. She pulled back, her expression changing.
What were you thinking? How many times are you going to sneak off to do something completely insane?
Liv turned her scowl on Link and me.
And how many times are you going to let him?
Link raised his hands in surrender.
Hey, we weren't even there the last time.
John leaned his forehead against hers.
He's right. I'm the one you should be angry with.
A tear rolled down her cheek.
I don't know what I would have done.
I'm okay.
Link puffed his chest out.
Thanks to me.
It's true, John said.
My protege saved our asses.
Link raised an eyebrow.